Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for joining me on StashMyComics.com podcast number 20, the Big 2-0. We are powered by Geek Energy. With me, as always, is our editor at Stash My Comics. He's the man behind the blog. Jason, how you doing today?
Awesome. How are you?
I am doing good. Ready to pull what's left of my hair out, but aside from that, I'm doing superb. Next to Jason, we have the man behind Geek Cinema, he who writes what is the best article on Stash My Comics right now. Tom, how are you today?
That is true. And do a funny definition of the word, of the term, next to.
Next to. Oh, hi, Tom. from the room, right? Okay. And with us, we have a guest today. Kelly couldn't make it today. She had some other things to take care of. Kelly, we wish you well. We'll see you back in 2 weeks. And I know last week I said we were going to have Paul O'Connor on this week's podcast, but unfortunately Paul had to take care of some other things that needed to be taken care of first. But don't worry, guys, we got Paul set up to come back in a couple of weeks, so that's still going to happen. But my friend Scott, who's going to be writing the video game reviews for StashMyComics.com, he was cool enough to jump into the open spot and help us out when we really needed it. Scott, how you doing?
Surviving so far. You?
I'm doing good. So you're going to be writing video game reviews for us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you have in the pipe? What games are you going to be bringing our way?
Well, it's going to be anything from current stuff like Condemned, Skyrim, Mortal Kombat, Burnout, whatever, to old stuff like GoldenEye, wrestling, you know, from the N64 days when it was good, Earthbound, Mario Kart, you know, stuff that made you hate your friends. Terrible games and, gaming-related news.
Oh, well, fantastic. All right, good. I'm looking forward to reading the articles. Just to give everybody a little bit of history, I've known Scott since high school, which was a long time ago. I used to go over to his house and hang out, and we would eat French bread pizzas, drink soda, and play GoldenEye until our brains were mashed. So, but anyways... moving forward, I did want to ask you guys something. Guilty pleasures. Do you have them? Tom, do you have a guilty pleasure?
Do I have a guilty pleasure? We've already discussed my Words with Friends obsession, so I guess that's one. Pro wrestling, I suppose, is two, which I watched in college, and then I've just started watching again very recently. What else? No, it used to be video games, but I have a Wii and the Wii sucks. So that was the end of that.
Jason, do you have any guilty pleasures? Now, I know that Troll 2 may or may not be one of those.
Well, I like bad movies in general, and not like Maximum Overdrive bad, where it's like a middle of the road bad. I mean, terrible films that you just. It's so bad, it's good.
So how's that not like Maximum Overdrive?
Scott, help me out here. Guilty pleasures, what do you have?
I'm going to have to share in that wrestling one. I'm going to have to go ahead and admit I'm a slight John Cena fan. You can boo me all you want.
Wow.
No, I like John Cena.
Come on. The reason I ask is because last night I sat down and watched one of my guilty pleasures with my daughter. She's 13, so I felt that now was the time to expose her to one of these, and it was A Night at the Roxbury.
Oh, God.
Please tell me it's not in your top 10 or anything.
For all-time films, like for me to enjoy, no. But it'd be number 11.
You need to take a photo of your DVD shelf and post it on the blog. Because I just cannot believe some of the things you're trying. You own a copy of Night of the Roxbury?
I do.
Do you have one other person?
Do you have the 3D Blu-ray?
No. No, I would buy the Blu-ray for it, though.
It's a two-hour movie. You and Chris Kattan are the only ones.
Me and Chris.
It's a two-hour movie based on a sketch with no words.
But it's good. You want a piece of this? How about a little of that? Yeah.
No.
Was that a quote from Night of the Roxbury? Because it just sounded like you being creepy.
Night at the Roxbury was a good movie. It wasn't bad. No. It wasn't terrible. I mean, it was
yes, it was
hilarious. No, not at all. But I'm almost afraid to tell you guys my other guilty pleasure. Because I get ridiculed enough on the podcast by you guys, and it's my own fault because of what I enjoy. But with this, I think that this would take the cake, and I think I might lose my comic book credentials for
mm-hmm.
this. So
you mean aside from liking Mystery Men?
Well, this is a little worse than that.
Well, a side note on that, by the way, Mystery Men was on Comedy Central the other night, and actually I watched it, and yeah, it still sucks.
Yeah. Not at all. Not at all. We'll see by the end of the podcast if I'm ready to reveal my guilty pleasure, like my ultimate guilty pleasure or not. But
are you not going to tell us?
Well, you guys have to earn it.
You make it sound like a prize.
We'll see who can not ridicule me on Maximum Overdrive for the entire hour.
I lose.
I'm out. I already did.
Well, starting now. But
I got nothing to say then.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break for a second, but when we come back, we're going to dive into some news. But before we do that, I do want to mention some of our sponsors. First off, take a look at longboxgraveyard.com. It's 1978 there all the time. Paul O'Connor also does an article for us once a month called The Dollar Box. That's a great article to check out. Anything that has a cover price of a dollar or less, Paul will most likely review and take a look at for you, the reader. Also, don't forget to take a look at JenniferXJoseph.com. She's a novelist, poet, and a pop culture nerd. I've been to the website. It's really awesome. Lots of cool stuff, lots of informative stuff. Great articles, great poetry. Please take a look at that. She's one of our sponsors. She's been on the podcast before, and hopefully we will get to have her back again. Also, I was supposed to do this last week, and I forgot, and I'm sorry, guys, but I'm going to do it this week. Take a look at Talkin' Shop with Chris and Josh. Those guys are really informative about what they talk about. They do the same thing that we do. They talk pop culture, comic books, movies, video games, music, you name it, it's there. These guys know what they're talking about. Head over to Talkin' Shop with Chris and Josh. It's at talkinshop.podomatic.com. Take a look at those guys. Please help out our sponsors that we help out. We'll be back in just a second.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Stash my comics.
Powered by Geek Energy.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a look at the news. The first thing we are going to cover is, I think, the most exciting. An original piece of artwork for Amazing Spider-Man number 328. Todd McFarlane did the cover art and the interior art for that. At a heritage auction this past week, it sold for a record amount of $657,250. That blows me away. Let's talk about that for a second. Scott, I want to start with you. That price is astronomical to me. I mean, have you seen the cover for Amazing 328?
I may have glanced at it years ago. I do think that's a stupid amount of money for a piece of art.
It is. It's ridiculous how much that somebody would pay for that. Obviously, they wanted it that bad, but I mean, wow. So what are your thoughts on that, Scott? What do you think about that?
Well, I personally, it's Todd McFarlane. I've never been a huge fan of his.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think comic book should sell for that much. I mean, if you have that much disposable income, you should probably be doing something better for humanity than buying a comic book cover.
How is that not supporting humanity, though, that's preserving an awesome piece of artwork?
How many comic books could you buy with that much money?
A lot. Especially
exactly.
On Saturdays at my local comic shop where it's four for a dollar.
Exactly.
Jason, let me get your thoughts on this. $657,250. Thoughts?
It's a lot of money. I mean, he's the aside from Mark Bagley, he's the quintessential Spider-Man artist. I mean, I could see it going for more than, you know, somebody who drew two issues of Spider-Man, I guess this is the only cover that there is, because if it had been any of the better covers, 300, 301, it would have gone for much more money.
Believe it or not, at the same auction, they had the original artwork for Spider-Man number one, the series that was made specifically for McFarlane. That only sold for like $300,000.
Yeah, because no one, because they, look, they've made enough Spider-Man number ones that people are sick of seeing that picture.
But don't you think that the original artwork for that cover is more iconic than 328?
More iconic, yes. More important, no.
Okay. Okay, why not?
Well, 328, he was, what, 30 issues in on his Amazing Spider-Man run? I mean, that's to me, that's bigger than just the Spider-Man number one cover.
Okay, fair enough. Tom, what are your thoughts on this?
Wait a second. Was 328, wasn't that his first Spider issue? Was that his first cover?
No.
298.
Yeah, 298 was the first with McFarlane.
Yes, yeah, so I got to agree with you, Tim. I don't know why some random issue of Amazing would go before, would net twice the amount of money that the first issue, the artwork from Spider-Man number one would net. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Just because it's older, I don't know. But I've never been into the whole pricing of the artifacts of the industry, whether it's books themselves or original artwork. Look, when I spend that kind of money on the on original cover artwork to a comic book, if I had money to burn, sure, which I assume whoever purchased this does. I mean, it'd probably be pretty cool to hang up in a living room, sitting room, comic room, the study, the conservatory, the lounge, some other room that's on the Clue game board,
no,
you know.
I mean, to put it in better perspective, that's over $500,000.
Yeah, I figured that out myself, thanks. Appreciate that.
Well, you are a writer, you know,
I'm an English teacher. I have no mathematical skills, I understand. I appreciate the clarification. I guess sometimes it just amazes me the things people would rather have than money.
Wow.
But you assume, I mean, look, again, you assume that this is not a lot of money necessarily to this person who bought it.
Well,
that
yeah, no kidding. If you have that type of money to just spend on that or to put or to have at your disposal in an auction, then it's not that big a deal.
This is more of an indictment of the American economic system than it is of the comic book industry in any way.
That's very true. Okay, so let's dive into our second piece of news real quick. I mean the Amazing Spider-Man cover is a feat in and of itself, but I think that this second piece of news is a feat also, and not necessarily in a good way. The Hobbit, J.R.R. Tolkien's masterpiece that was written as a prequel to the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's going to be made into three films. Is that necessary? I say no. I don't think that it needs to be made into three. Two, I can live with two. But three films, I think that's stretching it a little bit. Jason, let's go with you first. What are your thoughts on this?
Is it necessary? No. Well, are we all going to see all three? Yes.
Speak for yourself.
I won't, though, because I'll be late like I always am, and I won't get to see it till the last day it's in theaters.
Well, that's your own fault.
It is.
I mean, no, it's not necessary. I trust Peter Jackson. Like, you know, it's the same thing with Zack Snyder. I trust Peter Jackson enough to make a good film. So, yeah, I'm not that upset about it, I guess. I mean, I understand, it's still going to make a ton of money, so there's no point in getting too upset about it. Or
can the book hold three movies, though? I mean,
probably not.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, Fellowship is twice as long as The Hobbit, and that was one three-hour movie.
Now, if they really want to challenge, they need to make a Silmarillion movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that, Scott, give me your thoughts on this. The Hobbit being made into three films. Do you think it's right? Do you think it's wrong?
While I agree that I'll probably go see all three of them, I do have to also agree that I don't think it can hold three. It might. I think it's going to be a little dry towards the end. I mean, I know that they're.
I
know that. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I agree with you on that. I think that by the third film, I think that we may get a little tired of it.
I know that Jackson is supposed to be getting like a whole bunch of the extra stuff Tolkien wrote for it,
mm-hmm.
like the appendices and all that.
Okay.
But I haven't read those personally, so I don't know if they're going to be just information.
All right. With that, Tom, let's get your thoughts on this. The Hobbit, three films.
All I've got left is a Z. I'm trying to play a Z. It's my last letter, damn it. I can't figure out how to... I'm sorry. Wait, me? Am I up? Okay.
Ten points. Save it for something good.
I've got nothing left. My last letter, I'm going to lose because I can't play the Z. Listen, I'm not a big Lord of the Rings guy, as I have discussed in one of my articles prior. I can never get through the books. I can never get through the movies. I liked the look of The Hobbit. I was like, oh, okay, you know, I like Martin Freeman a lot. I'll probably, it's one movie. I go see one movie. Now it's three movies. It's, why? It's ridiculous. It's half the length of one chapter of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and you're going to spread it out of three movies. And this is a trend that you're getting now that Harry Potter did it. Now everyone's doing it. They broke the last Twilight movie to two movies. They're breaking the last Hunger Games movie into two movies, and there's nothing to support it. The text isn't deep enough or big enough to support it. It's ridiculous.
Now, see, I'm with you on the fact that it is very hard to read Tolkien stuff. Like, I couldn't get through Fellowship as a book, but as a movie, I loved it. I was immersed into it. I was a part of that for the 3 hours of all three of them, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I took my kids to the theaters to see each one, but like you said, I mean, there's just not enough text to support three films for The Hobbit.
No. And look, when I saw Fellowship, I was bored until suddenly, okay, now it's getting good. Oh, look, here come the credits.
What was it they said? They're walking.
Yeah.
Then they're walking some more, and they talk to some trees, and then they're walking, they drop the ring in, and then they walk home.
Yeah. Good. And have we talked about this? I don't know. Have you seen the How It Should Have Ended, The Lord of the Rings?
No, I have not.
Anyone see that?
Scott?
Yeah.
No?
Yes, I have.
I'm going to spoil it for you. Cover your ears. It's an animation of them riding one of those giant birds, all of them, and they fly over Mordor and drop the ring in. And they're like, well, that was easy. Imagine if we had walked all that way. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so I think the final consensus is that obviously we'll go see it, but...
No.
No, you're not
going to
go.
except for Tom.
Yeah, I'm. Look, if I manage to finish the original trilogy before then, I'll go see it. I still haven't watched the whole original trilogy, so.
Wow, you are way behind, sir.
I can't really mock you for Maximum Overdrive and Mystery Men because I haven't seen Lord of the Rings trilogy.
There we go. My redeeming quality.
Wait, Tim's saying you're behind and he still hasn't seen Spider-Man?
Hey.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're not talking about me here. We're talking about Tom. it's not always about me, guys. It's
right. Point out where Tom's failing.
It's about you guys, too.
Understood.
All right. We're going to take a break for a second. But when we come back, we are going to talk about The Red Hood, Lost Days, and Atomic Robo, Free Comic Book Day edition. We'll be right back.
All right. I'm just going to take a quick look at what's on my pull list. What's this music? What's going on?
Coming this fall on NBC.
What?
A new reality series.
What the hell?
Geek Intervention.
What are you doing in my house?
He was hooked. Addicted. To a website.
I'm not addicted to StashMyComics.com.
He couldn't stop cataloging his comic books.
I can stop.
He couldn't stop writing member reviews.
I can stop. I have to go to work.
Locked in a spiral of self-destruction.
It's not...
Inching closer to death with each passing second.
Oh my God. Why are you playing that music?
Wednesdays on NBC.
Well, I'm not watching because Wednesday night is comic book night.
Oh, really?
Yes, really, yes.
Well, it's the new Walking Dead out this week.
Yeah, I'm actually going to the comic book shop now. It's, do you want to ride or something?
Well, if you're going that way, I guess.
All right, let's go. I'm going now.
Geek Intervention, Wednesdays on NBC.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is the pull list. These are the comic books that we decided we were going to read for the week, even though we may have read it 2 minutes before the podcast started. But who's counting? Let's go into Red Hood, Lost Days. That was Kelly's choice, but Kelly can't be here, so we're going to review her book for her. Jason, let's start with you. Basically, what this book covers, it's a six-part miniseries, and what it covers is the span of time from when, now correct me if I'm wrong, but from when Jason Todd comes back all the way to when he comes back in Hush, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go over your thoughts on this first of the six in the miniseries. What do you think about it?
It's all right. The main problems I have with the whole Red Hood character, I loved Hush, and I loved Under the Hood in the comics, because, you know, you've got Jason Todd, he's back, and then you find out how he came back, and then right. You're just like, oh, that's not good.
Slightly disappointing?
Yeah, I mean, but the focus on this issue in particular, it's all right. It's I like the art more than the story, again. If there's anyone that can write Jason Todd or Red Hood, whatever you know, want to call him, it's Judd Winnick, the guy that basically brought him back.
Right.
So this will be probably the best that you'll see him written.
Now I will say this, along with what you said, that the artwork for this issue is a lot better than the story was. But we'll get into what I thought about it in a second. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's okay. I guess the best way to describe it is I didn't want my time back when I was finished.
Right. Understood.
But it wasn't anything that blew me away. So.
Right. Okay, Scott, so tell me what you thought about Red Hood Lost Days number one. Good, bad, indifferent, what'd you think?
Well, I have to say, I like the story. I thought that the art was a little heavy on the black. It seemed kind of iffy sometimes.
Okay.
Personal preference, but I did like the story, and I read it before I found out how he was actually returned from the grave, and I think that kind of made it worse.
Okay, Tom, your thoughts on Red Hood Lost Days, this six-issue miniseries, what did you think about it?
Well, I like Judd Winnick writing the Bat Universe. I mean, he had a run on Batman years ago, clearly, that I enjoyed a lot and had a lot of the, I was going to say Black Skull, but that's not right, Black Mask.
Mask, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. so I enjoyed this. I guess it's sort of like, I'm already in sort of the Ra's al Ghul Talia mindset from the Dark Knight stuff just a couple weeks ago, being The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
I enjoyed this. I'm curious. This is, I'm going back to the new 52 questions, like what counts, what doesn't. I guess all the bad stuff still counts, except Tim Drake was never Robin or something. I still...
Didn't he become like Red Robin or something like that?
I don't know, I guess so, yeah. I like this enough to say, hey, I would read issue two because I like the writer, I like the art, and I like the Jason Todd actor. I do remember Hush, where... Hush ended up being Jason Todd. That was cool. And then all of a sudden it was Clayface, and that wasn't cool.
Right.
And then Jason Todd was there, and I never was quite clear. He wasn't here, that it wasn't him, then he came back.
It was retcon to where he fought Batman for half of that fight, and then Clayface switched places with him.
Oh, that's stupid. I just should have made Jason Todd from day one. Who needs Clayface?
Right.
So, look... this book, look, I find it interesting. I like the characters. They're, you know, Tom and Russell Gould are great characters. That's what, you know, they picked them for Liam Neeson or Russell Gould for Batman Begins. That was real exciting because, hey, here's a great bad villain that is underused and
really good as Russell Gould.
But it's fantastic, Russell Gould. And just the fact that they used him was great. So having those characters in here, that makes it interesting because I find them to be very interesting characters, some of the more interesting bat villains. I would buy the second issue. Yeah,
that's pretty much the same feeling that I have with it. I liked it enough to want to read more. Like as I was reading it, I was commenting to Jason and to Scott that Jason Todd in this did an awful lot of ass kicking. Like that's all he did was he was like this mindless automaton that just, when faced with adversity, would beat up these guys that they put in this room with him, and then that was it.
Yeah.
But the artwork to me was better than the story. The story felt a little flat to me. It didn't totally grab my attention. Like, it was something that I could have read and been like, okay, I'll check out the second issue to see what that's about. But other than that, it didn't capture me like I wanted it to. Sure. Yeah, I'm reading Countdown right now, and Jason Todd's a big part of that. And the way that they have him written, and that is really cool. And I guess I was kind of hoping that he would be like that in this, but this is more of like an origin story kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's get some final thoughts on this. Scott, we'll start with you. Final thoughts on Red Hood. 1 to 10, what would you give it?
Just basis, I'd probably give it about a 7.
A 7? Okay, why a 7?
Yeah. It was decent, but I grabbed the second issue, but in hopes that the storyline would pick up more.
Right, okay. Jason, final thoughts. Red Hood, Lost Days, 1 to 10, what would you give it?
7.
Okay, why a 7?
Because it's the kind of story where I'd buy the second issue if I didn't have to pay cover price for it.
Something you'd find in a dollar box.
Yeah, there's no rush for me to read it. So.
Okay, fair enough. Tom, final thoughts, 1 through 10, what would you give it?
Probably 6.
A 6? Okay, why 6?
Because it was good enough, it was entertaining enough, but two things. One, I'm like Jason just said, I'm not running out to buy the next issue. Second of all, I would have to say that it's the sort of thing I could see myself getting rid of in a purge of comic books.
Right, I hear that.
Like, read it once, don't read it again, that sort of thing.
Yeah. As far for me, I would give it a 7. It captured my attention a little bit, but not enough to make me want to rush out and get all 6 issues. It's just, like, I'd be like you and... like Scott and Jason, I'd be grabbing the second issue, but I wouldn't want to pay full price for it. This is something that if I found in a dollar box, I'd check it out. But like Tom, if it fell into a pile of comics I had to get rid of, I wouldn't be sad to see it go.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but let's go on with the next one. This is the one that I'm actually kind of excited to talk about. With Atomic Robo, the free comic book day edition for this year, 2012. Tom, when you sent that to me in email, that was the issue that you wanted to review, my first response was, why? I honestly didn't know why you wanted to do a free comic book day edition, but now I can see. So, Tom, take it away. Tell me what this issue is about.
Atomic Robo free comic book day edition. It's two short Atomic Robo tales, and I had never read Atomic Robo before. The background, as far as I can garner from what I have sort of glanced on Wikipedia after having read this issue, it's he's a sort of 1950s era nuclear robot who is now a private eye. And he has sort of these tongue-in-cheek fantastical adventures that are, I got it on my Comixology app. It was a free download, so, and the art in the cover looks neat, so I'm like, all right, what the hell. And I found it to be just sort of remarkably intelligent and witty and fun and all sort of things. The first tale is great and has some great action sequences, great artwork. There's a great spin on the whole mad scientist wants to destroy the world sort of story. And even an ending that's kind of poignant to a certain degree.
But the second title, Him versus Dr. Dinosaur, is just it's fantastic. It's remarkable.
Dr. Dinosaur is hilarious. Yeah, I think that we may have read two different issues, though. I think you read the 2009 Free Comic Book Day, and while we were all searching for it on Comixology, we were like, it's 2012. It's the 2012 edition. So that's the one
read. Either way.
Either way. I mean, both of them are really hilarious. Like, with the 2012 Free Comic Book Day, Atomic Robo is... Jason, help me out here. He works for CERN at the Atomic Collider, and they're trying to...
Yeah, there's something going down the Hadron Super Collider. That Dr. Dinosaur is responsible for.
That's right. What did he say? I don't tell you how to use your stink glands. Don't tell me how to use my superior intellect. just the way...
Absurd, the
way that Dr. Dinosaur is written, whether in that issue or this issue, he is utterly hilarious. Scott, you've got a little bit of backstory on this. Who does Atomic Robo?
I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce his last name. It's Brian Clevenger, I think. He runs the website called nuclearpower.com, and I got into reading that website from a series of webcomics he did called 8-Bit Theater, which is basically the sprites from Final Fantasy doing really stupid things.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Is that him? Is the same guy?
Yeah.
That's great.
That's
great.
Fantastic. Like, Atomic Robo, I was not expecting it to be that good. I mean, it's the whole mindset of I get stuck reading the bigger stuff, the Marvel, the DC, the Valiant, the Image, and all that, and I have the tendency to forget about everything else that's on the other side of that. And when a gem like this is thrown my way, it really makes me appreciate how much work is put into those independent books. Because Atomic Robo, if nobody that's listening to this has ever read it, I strongly recommend picking up any issue of Atomic Robo just to dive into this. This was that hilarious for me. So, Scott, let me get your thoughts on this issue. What'd you think about it?
The one that I read was the one that involved CERN, just like you, and I thought it was hilarious. It's got 1,000 catchphrases throughout the whole thing.
Oh my God.
It kind of reminded me of Dr. McNinja.
What did they call T-Rex? The Futuresaurus Rex?
Yeah, it's Futuresaurus Rex. Yeah. It evolved into head missile launchers.
Yeah. And it's going to continue to evolve in the time loop. I think my favorite part was when the T-Rex spit out the two machine guns and grabbed him in his little hands and started shooting around. That had me cracking up. Jason, let me get your thoughts on Atomic Robo.
It's hilarious. It's been a while since I've actually read a comic and had that much enjoyment, just base enjoyment just from laughing at it. It makes me want to read more about, you know, his adventures.
Okay, so I think this is a fair assessment, Tom, that you've got us all interested in Atomic Robo in general. Like that.
Yay for me.
Yeah, the Free Comic Book Day editions do their job. I mean, the whole point of them is to get you motivated and get you interested in something that you may or may not have read before. And with Atomic Robo, I mean, that hit the nail on the head. That was right on the mark for me. So, Tom...
I just found the Free Comic Book Day edition that you're talking about. I'm so excited.
Well, you need to read it.
There's another free issue, too. There's two more free issues of it. Fantastic.
You have to read this. It's hilarious. Dr. Dinosaur did it for me. That was it. That sealed the deal. So, Tom, final thoughts on Atomic Robo in general, 1 to 10. What would you give it?
I'm going to give it a strong 9.
Okay. Okay, why a strong 9?
You know, I don't want to necessarily come and give it a 10 based off of one issue, but I just think that it's so clever. What I've read is so clever, so creative, and it's got not only solid artwork, but solid sequential storytelling. It depends on who the artist is going to be, of course, from issue to issue. But what I read had such great artwork, great personality. I mean, one of the things that's fantastic is the amount of personality he's able to get out of this machine, which is no small feat for either a writer or an artist. And I appreciate things that manage to be funny and smart at the same time, and this is one of those things.
It definitely is. Scott, give me your thoughts. Atomic Robo, Free Comic Book Day Edition. 1 to 10, what do you give it?
I'm probably going to have to agree with the 9. I like the artwork as well. It's not exactly realistic, but I think that's what gives it its charm.
the over-exaggerated eyes on Dr. Dinosaur and the expression that they're able to give in the pencils with him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Jason, final thoughts. Atomic Robo, 1 to 10, what would you give it?
8.5. It's very clever, like Tom said. Plus, anytime you can see a dinosaur in 2 or 3 different outfits, it's great. So, yeah, 8.5.
I think that I'm going to break the mold and give Free Comic Book Day 2012 for Atomic Robo a 10. I mean, it had me cracking up. As I was reading it, I was quoting lines to Scott and to Jason as I was going through it. I mean, it was hilarious to me. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I'll give it a solid 10. But we're going to take a break for a second. When we come back, we're going to hit up some trivia. I've got a trivia question for you guys that that you guys will actually have to do a little bit of research for. Stick with us. We'll be right back. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy. Okay, guys, this week we've got our trivia question. First, I want to say a couple of rules, but before we get into that, what we have up for prize this week is, again, 1,000 points that you can use on StashMyComics.com for our giveaways, and also we have a free digital download. Want to know what that digital download is? Guess this question right, and follow the rules, and we'll make sure that you get that. Okay, but here's rule number one. You must be a registered member of Stash My Comics to qualify. If you're not a registered member, it's free to register, so just take a couple minutes to do that so you can win some awesome prizes. Number two, when you enter your answer in the comments section, you must also put your username on the forums underneath your answer so we can notify you via private message. Number three, anyone that is an admin of any form on Stash My Comics or that works directly with the podcast is not eligible to play. Scott, you're out. Number four, the first correct answer wins. Once we have a correct answer, it will be noted on the comments section of that podcast, and the winner will be notified via private message. And also, if no winner is found before the airing of the next week's podcast, then the prize is forfeit, and we move on to the next week. Also, Two Guns, your rule that you helped bring about, if you win on one podcast, you are ineligible the next podcast. But the podcast after that, you can guess again. Make sense? Okay, good. Here's the question for this week. This week, I need to know what the first podcast was that Jason Martin, Tom Hefner, and myself were on together. What I need is the podcast number, I need the name of the segment, and I need the grades that each one of us gave. I'll let you stew on that for just a second. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back with our weekly distraction, which is the loyalty to Weekly Comics. We'll be right back.
Geek Hotline, how may I help you?
Hello. I was looking for a solution on how to better track my comic book collection. I've been using memory and pen and paper for a while, but it's not really working out well for me. What can you suggest?
That's a very good question, sir. I'll have to consult my fax machine.
I don't understand.
Excuse me, sir. I'm going to have to ask you to stay quiet while I concentrate in order to better serve you. Since you broke my concentration, I'm going to have to go over to my next machine here.
Why are you using Morse code? I think I'd better call back another time.
I'm afraid I'm not getting any answer to your question here. Let me just move over to this next piece of technology that I have.
Is that a foghorn? Am I hearing a foghorn?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. I can't get the answer to your question at this time. But if I can ask you to hold the line, please, I will get that answer for you as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Hello? 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 Did he just drive off? Heck with it. I'll just use stashmycomics.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the weekly distraction. Forget the fact that NBC may or may not be airing live coverage of the Olympics and that people on Twitter are getting really mad about that. Forget the fact that gold is continuing to skyrocket while the dollar continues to not be worth what it is in your pocket. Forget the fact that you have a 1 in 6 chance of rolling a 1 on a 6-sided die. This is the weekly distraction. This is what you're going to be talking about for the rest of the week. This week it's all about the loyalty to Weekly Comics. Okay, so we've got some differing viewpoints on that. As far as, like, what the basis for this is, like Marvel and DC, Image, Valiant, all these companies, anybody that's trying to make a comic book, puts out a monthly comic or sometimes a weekly comic. The bigger companies obviously put several books out every week. Is there a loyalty to that? Jason, let's start with you. Is there a loyalty to purchasing weekly or monthly comic books?
To a certain extent, yes. If everyone had the mindset that, I'll just wait for the trade, then we wouldn't have any trades because nothing would get written and, you know, no one would buy anything weekly, so then nothing would get done for a trade.
Well, let's take it a step.
Yeah, I mean, there's
do you buy?
All the Green Lantern titles, all the X-Men titles, and I started picking up Captain Marvel when that came out.
The new one?
Yeah, with Carol Danvers.
Okay. So is it safe to say that you're dedicated at least to the Green Lantern titles and all the X titles?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer having the floppies. I like trades because that keeps me from digging out the, you know, having to go searching through 40 boxes for comics. So I like having trades, but generally I get trades of stuff that I already have in my collection.
So why that type of loyalty then? Why just those specific books versus everything else that your favorite companies put out? Like what about the Superman titles or the Batman titles?
Because I don't care about Superman like I do Green Lantern.
Okay, but like with DC, I mean, obviously you've got a severe loyalty to them with the Green Lantern titles. Does that bleed over into other titles? Would you give other titles a shot, or do you just stay specific to the ones that you enjoy?
No, there's something that comes out that's coming, like the before Watchmen stuff. I'm picking that up because I want to read it about Watchmen. I'm not going to pick up a book just to pick it up and, you know, help out a struggling title.
Right.
I'm going to pick it up if I find it interesting. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, and I find Green Lantern interesting, so...
Right. Okay, Scott, let's go to you for a second. Loyalty to monthly comics. What do you think about that? I mean, do they deserve your $3.99 every month or even every week? Like Spider-Man just recently was on a weekly purge. Some of the X titles, I think, were hitting weekly marks there, too. What are your thoughts on this, Scott?
I think if you enjoy a character, why not? I mean, I've always been a big fan of Iron Man.
Right.
You know, another character that I was a fan of was Darkhawk, which, you know, fell to the wayside and he became like a B character.
He did, but he was like part of the 90s push for new characters, like Darkhawk and Sleepwalker and, Ghost Rider, the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider. Who else was on there? Deathlock, several of those guys. A lot of those, I mean, their titles and stuff fell down. But when you were picking those up, I mean, that loyalty was there, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if the story kept my interest, I kept picking them up. It was when the stories got stupid or they started introducing, you know, really dumb story elements, I just, that lost my interest and I stopped picking them up.
Right, when everything just kind of got really dry and it just, at least to me, I mean, like with the Clone Saga and Spider-Man, that cut my loyalty. Like, I stopped buying comics altogether because of that. But with that, Tom, let me get your thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on the loyalty to weeklies?
I think loyalty is an odd term to be used to define this. You can be loyal, I think, to the industry, to comics, and not buy your books weekly or buy titles on a monthly basis. It depends on taste. Look, I only buy trades now. I stopped buying weeklies a while ago because I got tired of – I stopped enjoying – buying 1/6 of a story, you know, spending $3.99 to just get 1/6 of a story.
Right.
I'm going off the standard 6-issue arc that's kind of become the norm. So I prefer reading in the print format, and the company is still getting my dollar in a price point they've decided that is applicable for them, or a price point they've decided works for them. So I really don't see the problem here. I only buy one weekly right now, and it's AVX, so when that's done, I'm going to stop buying weeklies again.
Well, why just AVX? Why not anything else, like Winter Soldier, or what I think is Marvel's best with Daredevil? Have you even had the idea to maybe try some of those out, or is AVX just the only one that's grabbing your attention?
You know, it's a combination of I really dug the concept of AVX. It's one of those things where when I heard the concept, I'm like, well, gee, why didn't they think of this 30 years ago? Yeah, honestly, you know, you're looking for a cosmic level force that binds your heroes together into one stupid giant crossover. The Phoenix Force is a great way to go.
The funny thing is I was scanning through my X Factor comics the other day. Yes, I read 80s X Factor, but. In one of those issues, there was the Avengers versus X-Factor. It's not the Avengers versus X-Men, but at least the idea was there 20 years ago.
Well, I'm just going to throw it out. There was a 4-issue miniseries called X-Men versus the Avengers.
Was there?
That came out in the 80s, yeah. I've read it. Basically, the whole plot is Magneto is now an X-Men, but the Avengers want to bring him in for his crimes against humanity, so it's them trying to take Magneto.
Yeah, it was, I guess it wasn't really the Avengers. I mean, the Avengers was not original, as Jason just pointed out. It's been done a couple times. It wasn't the Avengers aspect that drew me in. The Avengers X-Men aspect drew me into it. It was the Phoenix Force aspect, and kind of using that as a let's have the entire universe involved with this character sort of aspect of it that really I thought worked. But I mean, we're going to get off the point a little bit. I started buying AVX because, look, I'll be, once it's over, I can stop buying weeklies again. And I'm fine with that. And even if I had thought about buying weeklies again, then they launched Marvel Now. Like, oh, I've got to relearn how to buy weeklies again. Forget this.
Well,
would you agree that if everybody went the route of buying trades, then it would hurt the industry and probably kill the industry?
No, because then they just start making trades and they stop making weeklies.
Well, see,
you think Marvel is propped up? Do you think Marvel and DC are propped up by your sales? They're propped up because they're owned by these mega conglomerates, Disney and Warner Brothers.
That's very true. That's very true. But then you have fans like me who, like in the 90s when Scott and I were collecting. Scott, how many weeklies were we buying? I mean, we were buying Spider-Man, the X-Men, any X title that was out at the time, which was X-Factor, X-Force, Excalibur, you name it. I mean, any Spider-Man titles, Daredevil, the list goes on. And Valiant, its first run, was really huge then. But like with me, Tom, where you're a trades-only buyer, and Jason, you kind of stick to specifics, like Green Lantern and the X-Men, my pull list is everywhere. I went to the comic shop the other day after not being there for about 3 weeks, and they handed me the stuff that was in my file, and it was $50. I couldn't believe that. I was like, holy smokes. Like, I've got on there the new Daredevil run, Amazing Spider-Man, Bloodshot, Harbinger, Exo, Man of War, Archer and Armstrong is on there. Everything new from Valiant is on there. Winter Soldier is on there. What else do I have? Gosh, too many to count. Like, I'm the type of guy that will put... Oh, Earth 2 is on there also. But I'm the type of guy that if I read one issue of it and I like it, I'll put it on my pull list and then kind of forget about it. And then I have to... Yeah, I have to clean it out, like, every 2 months or so because right. It gets overwhelming for me. But, like, trades, I have a hard time buying trades because I don't know what to buy. I don't know where to start. And I'm the type of guy that doesn't like to start in the middle, even though it's, like, a new story arc, because the stuff that took place before still kind of has a hand in what's going on now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that... You know, probably, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, even more than today, the books were being written for the trade. It was pretty clear. I think books were being written for the trade. They're pretty clean, you know, 6-issue arcs. It makes sense, but if you don't like starting in the middle of things, then I kind of don't understand why you wouldn't prefer the trade, because that's kind of what it's designed to do, keep you from starting in the middle.
Right, but I've always felt that, like, trades, like, you don't want to buy Volume 6 of the Ultimate Spider-Man trades. You want to go back to Volume 1 and start there, because then you're missing all of that stuff from previous. And I know that, like, with the Amazing Spider-Man and stuff like that, that's very hard to do because the older issues are extremely impossible to get a hold of unless you're a billionaire. And it just kind of goes from there. Like, the Brand New Day storyline was a restart for Spider-Man. A lot of people hated that. I hated that. That was half the reason why I stopped buying comics a couple of years ago. Spider-Man twice has done that to me with the Clone Saga and Brand New Day. I mean, I'm the type of collector or buyer of monthlies and weeklies that if they put out a terrible, terrible storyline that's like enough to make me upset, I'll just stop buying them altogether.
The thing with the trade is I think that because it's sort of, there's 6 issues worth of word of mouth out there, it's easier to avoid bad stories.
Well, Scott, let's jump in with you for a second. Going back to when we were collecting in the 90s, I mean, how loyal were you to the weeklies?
I have a ridiculous Iron Man obsession. So I pretty much, that was like most of it for me. I did have the X-Men. Like, I follow the Phalanx thing, Onslaught, those things. I was more grabbing Marvel stuff than anything else, mainly because I didn't know a whole lot about the DC and the Image and all those. And I just stopped collecting comics for years. I just started getting back into it, and I kind of regret all of those storylines that I've missed over the years.
Yeah, you've quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like,
but you can go back and get the trades.
Right.
Yep, exactly.
And that right there is what the trades are good for. I mean, the trades are perfect for the stuff that you missed, and it helps kind of bring people back into comic books. But I don't know, like with the monthlies and the weeklies, 90% of it to me is not that good. A lot of it's watered-down stuff. Like, I'm reading Countdown right now in preparation to read Final Crisis. And Countdown is not that good, to be honest with you. Like, 52 was a really good idea, and it really, really worked because it was streamlined specifically for those characters, and it was a straight story. But Countdown kind of scatters all over the place. And I was buying those when they were coming out, and I remember stopping reading them halfway through. And now I'm kind of going back through them again, and I can see why I stopped. But
what the hell's Countdown?
Countdown.
It was the second weekly title after 52 that DC put out.
I thought they put, what about Trinity?
Trinity was another one. It was weekly as well.
Yeah. So this is the third one they put out.
But the Countdown was the response.
Wait, I remember. I remember. Okay.
And it was them counting down until the horrendous Final Crisis series.
Yeah.
Man, quote unquote.
Actually, I want to amend my, I don't know, my question.
Okay.
If everyone bought trades, would that put the local comic shops out of business?
That...
Well, welcome to capitalism.
Cool. Well, then, you, I mean,
You have a loyalty to keep a local comic shop open. Do you have loyalty to keep CD stores open? Do you have a loyalty to keep DVD stores open? No, you don't.
I mean, well, I have more of a loyalty to keeping my local comic shop open than I do a DVD store, just because when I don't collect DVDs anymore.
Okay, so do people who collect DVDs have a loyalty to keep the DVD store open, or do they want to go to the most convenient, cheapest source for their hobby that they can?
Well, I mean, I don't collect DVDs because I collect Blu-ray.
All right, well, fine. do you go to a store to buy your Blu-rays?
No.
There you go.
He does it on Amazon.
Yeah.
I don't pay more than $15 for a Blu-ray.
Exactly. Neither. Exactly. I mean, I buy trades, but when I buy trades, I go to Amazon and buy the used one and pay $3.
See, that falls right in line with what we're talking about. I mean, with the comics industry, you know, the titles that they put out, they're trying to grab our attention. And obviously what's hot right now is Avengers and X-Men and Spider-Man and the New 52 and stuff like that. And then you've got the lower companies that are working just as hard to try and grab your attention from the bigger guys. So they've got to put out things that either you're familiar with, which what Valiant is doing, or with Image, and they're pumping out so many new titles, the other titles don't have a chance to breathe. And Hollywood does the same thing. I mean, they rely on us, and they take these oversaturated topics and storylines and characters and 80s nostalgia, and they pump it out as fast as they can, and sometimes as horribly as they can, and put it out on the screen and hope that we'll just go and spend the $8 to $10 for a movie ticket and go see it.
And we do.
We do. We do. We're like rats in a cage. I mean,
Listen. If you want to be loyal to weeklies, be loyal to indies, because they need your money. Marvel and DC don't need your weekly money. As long as Avengers in the movie theater keeps making $1 billion,
right?
They don't need your money. As long as Warner Brothers keeps propping up DC, they don't need your. The comic books are a huge testing ground for them to see what character should be turned into a TV or film property next. That's all they are.
How did they test the grounds with Guardians of the Galaxy? I just am curious about that.
I don't know. I mean, I think it goes back to what you just said, Tim. At this point, it's kind of, they feel like they can throw whatever the hell they want up there, and we'll pay $10, $12, $13, $15, $16 for it. I think when they announced Guardians of the Galaxy, I wrote this a couple of weeks ago. I think we might be on the cusp of comic book movie burnout. I think they might be doubling down a little bit too much.
Yeah, we talked about that 2 weeks ago on the podcast. All right, guys, let's get some final thoughts on this, the loyalty to the weeklies. Scott, we'll start with you. What are your final thoughts on that? Are you going to, since you're coming back into the scene now, are you going to be loyal to the weeklies again?
As far as loyalty goes, if the story catches me, I'll keep picking it up. If the story gets dumb, then I'm just going to stop. I mean, that's pretty much my whole view of it right now.
It's cut and dry right there. If it's intriguing, it's yours. If it's not, the title's gone. Jason, let's get some final thoughts from you. Loyalty to weeklies, what do you got to say?
Yeah, I'm with Scott. I mean, for the most part, I'm going to pick up everything in Green Lantern just because I'm a completist. He's my favorite character. I have to have all the Green Lantern stuff. If like, for example, I started picking up Captain Marvel, if by issue number 4 it's to the point where I'm like, I'm not enjoying this, I'm not going to pick it up anymore. But I'll still, you know, pick up my usual titles, and I feel the need, I guess, to somewhat support weekly titles to the point where, you know, I can keep reading a story if I like it.
Okay, well, we at Stash My Comics get access to a lot of the independent stuff. Do you think that they are oversaturating us with tons of number ones and new titles to get us to read? And most of these end up as miniseries. And how can we support something like that? How can we find the proverbial needle in the haystack out of that to support the independent stuff?
The independent stuff or just overall number ones and oversaturation of
overall
new thing? I guess as far as the big two go, you have to go with what you like originally. If you like a character that's coming out with a number one, like Gambit. Gambit's my favorite X-Men. He's coming out with a new number one, I think, next week or the 8th. So I'm going to get that just because I like Gambit, even though it's a number one and, you know, we've had 40 different number ones and they're going to have more with the Marvel now. I'm going to pick that up just because of the character. So I guess if you can sift through everything that's coming out, you can just pick out, you know, if there's a book about a character that you really like, just pick that one up, see how it goes. If you don't like it, just drop it. But.
Tom, let me take it to you to close it out. What are your thoughts on the loyalty to weeklies?
Look, like I said, I don't feel loyalty to any particular product, but I think I'm saying something that's not so different than what we're all saying here, is that if you enjoy something, you should buy it. If you enjoy an entertainment product, you should buy it. I don't enjoy the weekly format anymore. I just don't for 90% of it. I just don't enjoy it anymore. I much prefer reading trade. But if someone else feels differently, you know, God bless, go buy your weeklies. I'm not saying stop buying them. I'm saying just buy it in the format you like. And don't buy it. Where I disagree with Jason is don't buy it because you feel some need to keep somebody in business. I mean, again, this is a capitalist society. If you want to change the rules from that, then it becomes a different conversation. I would say this: the best thing that indies can do in terms to how do we support the indies, I think digital comics provides the illegal digital comics, by the way,
right,
provides the best way to do this. Give away issue one for free, and you see a lot of indies doing that now. Give away issue one for free, and then, you know, if people like it, they'll buy issue two.
Okay, I want to address Tom when he said that I have a need to keep on business. I don't have a need to keep DC and Marvel in business. There's loyalty for me to keep a title I enjoy reading going.
Because if
everyone stopped buying it, they'd stop. They'd stop making it.
And when I said keep doing business, I didn't mean Marvel and DC. Like I said, you buying their $3.99 comic once a month is not keeping them in business. You're just they've got other ways to stay in business. I mean, keep the local comic shop in business.
Oh, okay.
Right. Okay. With that, we'll close it out for this week for Stash My Comics podcast. I don't think I'm going to reveal what my other guilty pleasure is. I think I'm going to keep that secret for now. But maybe I'll tell you guys next week. We'll see how good you are. But you've been pretty good about...
Again, you treat this as it's like some big thing
it
that
is.
We have to know.
It is, and you
she's
must...
Gonna tell you next, she's going to tell you next week if I... She's going to tell you next week when I'm not here. That's the problem.
Right.
That's his whole plan. He doesn't want me here.
You can find out when it's released.
Yeah.
But, all right, guys, real quick before we go, I just want to say go ahead and hit up our merchandise store, www.zazzle.com. You can get T-shirts, bumper stickers, those really cool coffee mugs, hats, you name it, it's there. It has our name on it, Stash My Comics, which you need to have in your life. Also, don't forget, once again, to take a look at longboxgraveyard.com, where it's perpetually the year 1978 all the time. Paul O'Connor runs longboxgraveyard.com. He also does our Dollar Box column. Comes out once a month. Check it out. He's got a new one out right now. Also, again, I want to say check out jenniferxjoseph.com, novelist, poet, pop culture nerd. Great stuff on that website. Please take a look at it. Help support our sponsors who support us. Also, once again, take a look at Talkin' Shop with Chris and Josh, talkinshop.podomatic.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of here. Next week, we'll see you with David Pinkney, who does No West Across. He'll be our special guest. You guys take it easy. We'll see you next week.
One, two. 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.